Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. You're going to love today's episode. Get out your notepad. You're going to want to take notes for this one. I also want to remind you that today's episode is brought to us by our good friends at Leadership Pathway. They're helping churches like yours either begin a residency program or take an internship level to a whole new level. Surely you've stopped and thought, maybe you've even been forced to wonder where your next staff leader is coming from. Well, Leadership Pathway answers that question by helping churches develop the pipelines internally through residency programs. Last month, we hosted a webinar where we dove deep with a church that has five and is adding more residents. I want you to watch this. All you need to do is go to leadershippathway.org/unseminary. That's leadershippathway.org/unseminary. And if you didn't watch the webinar the first time around when it was live, we've got a recording of it. I want you to set aside 45 minutes to dive in and to get all your questions answered. It really is your next best step. A Leadership Pathway, they do everything from finding the residents, but then also coaching you through the entire process. Again, that's leadershippathway.org/unseminary. Well, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Let's go.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Super excited to have you here today. I've been trying to resist making a northern joke with today's guest. I'm just not even going to make it. We've got Pastor Mark's wife on the line from Fairbanks, Alaska. Fantastic church, True North, which is true. You know, there's a lot of churches named True North, but these guys are actually true. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much, Rich. Good to be here.
I'm so glad that you and honored that you would take some time out. Why don't you tell us a little bit of the True North story? Give us a bit of a flavor. If people were to come this weekend, what would they experience?
You know, we're a fun church. We're an 80-year-old church that four and a half years ago I came. I was the fourth pastor in 4 years. 87 people here on Sunday morning. For the first 2 months, I told my wife, I said, man, I think I made the biggest mistake of my life. 5 minutes after service, everyone was gone. And we had 1,658 people on Sunday morning, 4.5 years later, full of life. We live in a military community. The average age of our city is 29, and our church reflects that. It's just full of babies, full of children, full of teenagers, full of military personnel, young adults, college students, and then obviously the adults that live in our city. So I think they'd find a fun place to come, and we truly are the True North Church. We're probably the northernmost True North Church in the world.
That's true. You're the actual one. It's like all the First Baptists in the world. Somebody's got to be lying. You know, they all can't exactly be the First Baptist. So yeah, that's great. Now you've seen some amazing, incredible growth. I want to get to that, but I'd love to actually hear a little bit of the personal story around, like, how does a guy decide, or a pastor, a leader like you decide, hey, I want to be the fourth in 4 years? What was it that was going on inside that said, hey, that's a good idea. Let's do that.
You know, Rich, I don't know if we have time for that whole story, but I'll put it in a nutshell. You know, I lived in Las Vegas, believe it or not, traveled full time as a youth pastor for 14 years at Megachurch in Lower 48. Traveled full time, found myself the district youth director for the Assemblies of God here in Alaska. Did that for 6 years, loved the role. And then we found ourselves vacation in Fairbanks during spring break, which is, Right. Let's just say not many people vacation in Fairbanks during spring break. Okay.
Right.
I think it was 30 below zero that day. We had done some, just traveled and visited some smaller churches and pastors in the northern region of our state, and stopped at a hotel with a pool here in Fairbanks, got a Facebook inbox mail from the director of social services for the village of Barrow, which is the North Slope village, saying, are you still interested in adopting a baby boy? And so we were like they're going to give us a baby off of a Facebook email. So we called them back, talked with them. 11 days later, we walked out of the Native Hospital in Anchorage, Alaska, with a Nupiat Eskimo baby boy, healthy. And at that point, we started realizing, man, do I want to travel and raise money for missions, nonprofit work, or do I want to give my boy a pulpit someday? And some started shifting. And the same weekend we found out about our son, Fulton, we adopted, the third pastor resigned at this church. And I like messes. I like challenges. And so I looked at my wife. I said, maybe we're supposed to go pastor that church. It's kind of a mess.
Wow.
And make a long story short, Rich, we put our name in. We got 100% vote. And I told people it's the last time I'll ever get 100% vote here. And, we took the church 3 months later after we adopted our son. And it's been a fun run ever since. It's been incredible.
Yeah. That's amazing. One of the things, so there's a lot I'd love to unpack here. Obviously, amazing story. God's done an incredible thing in your church. I'd love to unpack, you know, what were some of those early steps that you were taking that you started you to think like, okay, you know, maybe I'll stay another week, you know, go beyond the kind of initial phase of like, I'm not sure about this, but what was it that was happening that started to get to the point where you think, hey, I want to stay plugged in here. And what were those days like?
Great question. You know, I kind of joke about the first couple of months. The first month was pretty lonely. It was pretty, people just left. And probably because they didn't want it. Do we want to give this guy a chance? Because the last guys have left so fast. You know, because I was the district youth director, I did camps and conferences. We do have one of the major universities in our state in Fairbanks. And so within 3 weeks of me pastoring, we did get an influx of about 25 college students. And so all of a sudden, the life of young people coming are, you know, we started having visitors and retaining visitors. And so really, we grew to about 250 within the first 4 months of being here, just because we put an emphasis on children's and youth ministry, and we're blessed. The government stocks our fishing pond with new people every single month. We live in a military community with two military bases.
Right.
And so when I talk about new growth, we had new people coming looking for a church. And so they didn't know the story of our church, the negative narrative. They just experienced great worship, great kids ministry. And I'd been here a month. We hired a dynamic kids pastor, one of the best in our denomination and fellowship. And so it really was a sovereign move of the government moving new people up for the military because of transitions and the college starting. And I had a ton of relationships with young people that were in our fellowship and went to our denominational camps and came to our church then.
That's amazing. So cool. So now, you know, you've really have become an incredibly thriving church, reaching all kinds of people. What have you been learning through that process? Let's try to pick apart a little bit. What is it that you've, you know, have kind of learned through that process? How are you kind of processing what God's done in your church over these years?
Yeah, you know, a couple things. Before I moved here, I read The Autopsy of a Dying Church. And one of the statements that Tom Rainer makes is if you look nothing like your community, you're dead. So when I got here, I realized that the average age in my church was probably 55 when I took it. The average age of my community was 29. So we had to look younger. Mm-hmm. So we strategically targeted, and I realized we hadn't updated our facilities in years. You know, in I got here in July, October, they pay us a dividend to live in the state of Alaska from oil revenue. So we raised $35,000 from dividend revenue, from tithe. And we poured it into building, remodeling our kids' area and youth facility, which was a multi-purpose room, fellowship hall, whatever you want to call it. And so we did a big emphasis and a big launch. And then October 3, we literally did everything we could to turn the focus of our church from the inside to the outside.
Right.
And so very cool. I call it developing a gospel road system. In other words, our church was invisible in our community. So we had to build bridges and roads from an invisible church to a culture and community that was disconnected from our church. And so we made everything we could. We made our church as attractive as we could on the inside. When I say that, marketing, advertising, banners on the side of our building. And then we challenged and just challenged, bring a friend, bring a friend, bring a friend. And consistently did that mantra. Like I gave an altar call for salvation the first 2 or 3 months and nobody got saved. Or accepted Christ, and now we have altar response cards turned every week. It's just, how do we turn the focus outside?
That's amazing. So I'd love us to pull that apart, because I think there's a lot of church leaders who are listening in that that's their heartbeat. And a part of why I'm excited to share this story is, yes, you obviously have that heartbeat, but then you actually put some stuff in place to actually see that take place and actually, you know, actually see that happen. And so I'd love to pull that apart. What were some of the kind of, you know, kind of tactics or things you did to help make that heartbeat an actual reality in your church?
First thing I did is I shared the gospel message every Sunday the same exact way. And one of my associates, after he came here, he said, "Mark, I've been in ministry 40 years. Why do you share the gospel the same way every Sunday?" I said, "I'm teaching people how to share Christ with their friends." And so even now, I've been here 4.5 years. Every Sunday, I'll share it the same exact way. There's an expiration date in the milk carton of your life. You're not promised tomorrow. It's as simple as ABC, A, admit you sin, believe. So I share the gospel message the same way every Sunday, because I'm training everyone how to share Christ with their friend every Sunday. The last thing I do every Sunday as I dismiss people is I say, "I love you. God loves you. There's nothing you can do about it. If you think that something at this church or the series we're preaching now would benefit a friend, would you and bring them?" And so every Sunday I'm sharing the gospel the same way. Because I believe people will bring their friends if they know that that the church is worthy of bringing your friends to. When people don't invite their friends to church, it's not because they're embarrassed about Jesus. They're embarrassed of their local church. And so I
– Come on now. Come on now.
All right, Rich?
So that's great.
Yeah. So if people are bringing friends to your church, it's because they're embarrassed of your church. That's why it's not attractional enough for them, and they're embarrassed to bring them. So I share the gospel the same way. I remind people, bring your friends every Sunday. And then we have invite cards. I know it sounds simple, but I remind them every week, bring a friend next week. Bring a friend next week. Yep. I did it as a youth pastor. And I think sometimes as adults, we forget to challenge our adults to do the same thing.
I wanted to stop and underline that for a second.
Yes,
this is good. I know, and you know that I am like a huge fan of invite cards, but I think the thing that I like about what you've captured here is the drive behind this. We have to keep on top of our people to say, "Hey, you need to invite a friend next week," and give them a reason to talk about it. Give them something that's happening that will then ultimately they'll want to tell friends about that. So I love that. Here's an example again, just to underline for our listeners. Here's an example of a church that has actually put into action, giving tools to people on a regular basis to invite their friends and the difference it makes in a church. Sorry, I interrupted you. Keep going there, Pastor.
No, don't. No, please interrupt me whenever. The other thing that we strategically do is we're always telling stories of the people that do get outside the doors of our church. We always tell people, guys, the church is leaving the building today. We're going to lock the doors of this building, but the church is in the community. And so we try whatever we can to partner with the school district. We have 900 teachers in our network, our school district. We live in Fairbanks, Alaska. There's not a Krispy Kreme. We fly Krispy Kremes up and sponsor the coffee, the coffee and donut break for the school district every year. And we have big signs that teachers are our heroes, the school district. And so those are just, again, ways. How do we leave the building? We at Christmas time, we do something called the 12 Days of Christmas, because again, I inherited a church that for years has never grown, 80 years, and they've lived on they've been in this building for 60 years with one service. We have five on Sunday mornings now. So the 12 Days of Christmas is we have hundreds. I think we had 499 dozen cookies baked. We wrap them in two by two. And we ring Salvation Army bells. We partner with nonprofits and help them do what they're doing. But we had every door in Walmart and our grocery stores one Saturday, and we had True North stocking caps, and we're ringing doorbells or ringing the Salvation Army bells. Raised more money for them than any other day in the history of Salvation Army up here. But what do I have? I had 100 people outside my church with True North hats on, passing out cookies with an invite to Christmas Eve, and then we're packaging box at the food bank. Anything we can do for 12 strategic outreaches during Christmas to get our people outside the doors of the building.
Wow. So you do 12 of those every Christmas?
Yes.
Or last Christmas you did 12 of them. That's amazing. Something like that. Like that's an example of one of those.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow, every day, there's 12 different outreaches during the Christmas season that we're involved with. One of those days is on Christmas Eve. We deliver to the hospitals, Every ward in the hospital, there's people that work on Christmas and Christmas Eve. So we deliver food baskets to the ER. And people will come, we'll give them a basket and give them a shopping list and the Saran paper, and they'll bring the gifts back and then we deliver to them. And so, it's incredible that the people that step up and do something. And again, what we're reminding people is we're not here just to receive gifts because it's Christmas and give gifts to our families. It's about a city that doesn't know Jesus.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's incredible. So obviously you talked about kind of the attractional side. This seems like the kind of, going out more missional or incarnational.
Yes.
What else should we be thinking about when we're thinking about this kind of trying to really transform our church into the kind of place that people, you know, will want to be a part of and then ultimately see life change bubble out of it?
Yeah, you know, here's the we're known as the Pink Moped Church up here. okay. We bought two mopeds and we painted them hot pink and we put Easter bunnies on them with shirts that say "Hop Your Tail to Church on Easter." And we drive these pink mopeds all around town. And we're a small community of 30,000 people in our city, 100,000 with a 20-mile radius of where we're at. And then we have the same color of banner on our side of our church, "Easter's coming," and invite cards that say the same thing. And then we put Easter bunnies on the corners with signs that say "Hop Your Tail in Church" with, you know, a True North logo. And so again, and what happens is people go, "Did you see a pink moped? I mean, that's crazy." And someone says, "Yeah, that's my church. Your church is cool." And what happens, it is empowers my people to be proud of their church. So it goes from I would call it a come and see attractional to a go and tell, which is missional, to a show and tell. I identify with your church, my church. I want to invite you, or they tell the story of how God met them God met them at an altar, transformed their heart and life. And now they're a walking billboard for Jesus themselves. And so, anything we can do to get people to live it in their neighborhood, invite their neighbors to life groups. It's just, we instill our people all the time that there's an expiration date on the milk carton of everyone's life, including your neighbor. And if they don't know Jesus before they die, they'll spend eternity separated from God. So we say that all the time. So our people have I would call it a bedrock theology. That when you dig down beneath what we do here, it's because there's lost people dying and they need to know Jesus.
Oh, amazing. That's great. Now, I'd love to pivot a little bit. So part of what I hope you're listening in, listeners, you're picking up, like, obviously some really creative ideas, some creative, you know, communication stuff, which is fantastic. But when you think about, how does that relate to kind of the system side or the metric side? What are you thinking about from a church growth point of view? Are there things we should be thinking about as church leaders on that side to kind of support? It's obviously more than just, hey, we've, you know, get a pink moped and, you know, your church will grow. How does that relate to kind of the system side?
Yes, great question. Really what I talked about right there is our evangelism system, which is how do you get people through the door or raise the temperature of the people in the pew to go invite their friends. For me, my church was dead and my evangelism system needed to get launched. But also assimilation is so important. And so when you walk through systems, there's obviously a weekend service is a system in itself, whether you think it is or not. Evangelism, assimilation, which is how do you get the new people to come back? And for us, when a guest visits, they turn in their guest cards at the end of a gathering and they get a text message within an hour. We have a team that enters their input into our database that Sunday morning. They get a text message that within an hour of them visiting, they walked out the door. Thanks for coming. They get a phone call the next night. We send a letter out on Monday that they'll get on Tuesday. So they get a text on Sunday. They'll get a phone call on Monday night, but the letter that got sent out on Monday gets to them on Tuesday. The person that calls them writes a handwritten postcard that they'll get sent out on Tuesday, which they'll get on Wednesday. So by Wednesday, they've had a text, a phone call, a letter from me, and a postcard. That's our assimilation.
That's amazing. That's great.
And then connecting people from there to our grow track or whatnot. Which is our spiritual formation system and our whole life groups and systems. You know, you can do all your work on becoming attractional and get lost people to walk through your door, but if you don't have the rest of the systems in place, you're not going to keep them.
Oh, so true. I would you be willing to, and if you don't know these numbers off the top of your head, it's totally fine. I'm not trying to embarrass you, but could you, do you have a sense of kind of percentage metrics, like first time guest or new here guest through to then how many people end up in grow? All, what does that look like for you? Do you have targets on that front? And what are you learning around some of the number stuff?
You know, it's all on churchmetrics.com. So I don't think I can open up right now because I'm talking to you, but we've had 978 visitors since January 1. So I know our visitors.
Oh, wow.
We keep about 35% of our visitors. So wow, that's a amazing high percentage of visitors we
keep. That's a very high percentage.
We work real hard on that. And so I know this. For us, the win, because we're in a military community, for us, we want to see more people graduate from GrowTrack than leave our church because they're launched because of military transitions. So this year, we've had 89 mm-hmm. people complete GrowTrack. And we've had 47 mm-hmm. military people that we know of that have transitioned. So for us, that's a win. That's 84 or 89 yeah, more people that, and of those, I think 49 of them have actually signed up for membership in our church, which means that they're committed to giving full time, to stewardship, all of those things.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, and is your growth track like a 1 week? Is it multiple weeks? How does that
our grow track? You know, we stole it from Highlands and so ours is 4 weeks so long,
4 weeks.
It's very, very effective for us. We do it every Sunday during our second gathering, and then quarterly we do it on a Saturday, a GrowTrack one day, and we'll do it before Easter to kind of beef up our volunteerism or serve teams for Easter. We'll do it right before school starts, and then we'll do it before Christmas.
Yeah, listeners, as you're listening in, I know I've highlighted this before, but the whole growth track from Church of the Highlands, we're seeing this consistently at fast-growing churches across the country that, it's one thing to get guests to show up, but it's another thing to get them to stick and stay. And, you know, I think a part of what the gift of what Church of the Highlands has done for all of us is to help clarify that this kind of regular connection event, not doing it quarterly or twice a year, but like keeping on top of it week in, week out makes such a huge difference. That's amazing. That's really cool.
Yes.
Now when you think about the, there may be people that are listening in that say, hey, like it's just all frivolous. It's just all, marketing mumbo jumbo kind of stuff. That's not what the church should be about. What do you say to people when they, I'm sure people never say that to you, but if they said that to you, what would you say? How do you frame that for them when you think about maybe some pushback that people might have around this sort of
thing?
Yeah,
Rich. I mean, I don't want to be sarcastic. I want to be honest here. I've had people leave our church because they say the church is too big, and everything in me wants to tell me, well, you're not going to like heaven because there's a lot of people.
Oh, that's true.
And so part of me, I mean, we had that happen more when I got here. Like all he cares about is numbers. And I'm thinking, read the book of Acts. The church grew daily. They added to their numbers. They multiplied. You know, by Acts 19, it said there was a myriad of churches. That word myriad is the Greek equivalent to the uncountable number which Abraham was told, your descendants will be as numerous as the stars of the sky and the sand of the seashore. You can't count the stars of the sky or the sand of the seashore. So I consistently tell people, Jesus came for the sick and not the healthy. If you're healthy, for heaven's sake, serve, start growing, get plugged in, lead a life group. But we're going to reach lost people for Jesus because that's what he did. And so I for those that would say, well, you know, you're not, you know, we're a deep church. And I say, well, so does that mean we're shallow? So I presented a seminar to our network, Rich, I completed my dissertation. It was on a system of evangelism for the local church. And I think there's this thought that when your church is growing, well, they must be doing something wrong. Rather than asking the question, is there something we're not doing as well as them that's helping them grow, that if we begin to do it, we might grow?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I love that. I love it. I think there is this weird thing that goes on where there's like an over-spiritualization of the small church, yes. right? Like there is the, I have spent my majority of my ministry career in very large churches. And, I think for a long time, I almost felt kind of guilty about that.
Right.
But you know what? The time is short. We've got to reach people in our communities. And, when God sends people, we want to catch them. we don't want to have them just flop out of the boat. We want to keep them in the boat. And so, I love that. That's great. Yeah. Now you have a website that I want to point people to. I want you to talk us through it a little bit. It's just thegospelroadsystem.com. Tons of free resources here. Lots of help for church leaders. Kind of talk me through, this. I want to make sure people check this out.
Yes, Rich. I just finished my dissertation and it was on a system of evangelism. So when I was creating all these, writing my dissertation, I realized I can't put everything I'm learning into my dissertation. So I created a website to take stuff I've learned and put in a downloadable format to help pastors. And so it's a simple website. I built it in a half a day, probably, and just hung a bunch of PDFs on there. And it really deals with the systems that we at True North have used, have taken from other churches, adapted to us. It has our, it has marketing strategies. It has our prayer strategies. It has our communication strategies, things that wouldn't fit in my dissertation, but I feel like we've had to learn how to do as we've grown. And I'm actually morphing it over to a new site called churchpacity.com that we're building, where we want to help we're in a rural setting. So my goal is not to compete with the mega churches of the world that have resources out there. It's how do we help rural churches maximize their capacity to reach their city? And so it's called Churchpacity because I think every church has a capacity and it has a city to reach. And so, but the gospelroadsystem.com, breaks down really how do you develop a preaching calendar? How do you develop an annual calendar? When someone says, well, man, Easter just kind of came up real quick on our lives. It's like, no, Easter's been on the calendar for years and it shouldn't just sneak up on us. Cats sneak, but dates don't. So how do we prepare long-term to maximize seasons of growth for our church? That's really what the website's for, thegospelroadsystem.com.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. Love it. This is a fantastic resource for people. I would really encourage you to drop by there and to get signed up and follow along with Mark. He's got a lot of real practical resources to help leaders like you. Mark, anything else you want to share before we wrap up today?
Man, again, Rich, just honored. And again, I just want to give a shout out. Rich's book, Flywheel, if you have not read that book, it's an incredible book that really, I think, would take some of what I talked about today, but give you a practical how-to right there on kind of how to get some momentum going in your church. And so I know you didn't ask me to do that, but it's a great book if you're looking for momentum at your local church.
Oh, thanks so much for that, Mark. I appreciate that. I think we're kindred spirits trying to do similar stuff. So I appreciate your kind words there. Mark, I appreciate being on the show. If people want to follow along with your story, which I would encourage them to do, to follow the church and get connected, what's the best place for them to send them to kind of follow along?
TrueNorthChurch.ak or TrueNorthAK.org is there. We have a podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm Facebook and I'm not a big Twitter guy because in Fairbanks, Twitter is just not very big. So it's Facebook and Instagram right. Up here. Just my name, Mark Zweifel.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks so much, Mark. Really appreciate you being on the show today.
Hey, thank you so much, Rich. God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.